from the Wormy Studios of NPR station WDIY in Bethlehem, PA, it is time for another Creepy Crawly Hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks. You bet your garden. Last week, we urged you not to dispose of your kitchen scraps in a compost pile. So what should you do with them? I'm Mike McGrath, and on today's show, I'll reveal how those scraps can be turned into garden gold that may be even better for your plants than compost. Plus, your fabulous phone call questions, comments, tips, tricks, suggestions, and ironically, iambic illuminations. So stay right where you are, cats and kittens. It's all coming up faster than your worms working for you.
Thank you to the members of WDIY for making all the programming you hear possible. Becoming a WDIY member is the best way to support your listening and to ensure WDIY will be here for the next person in our community to discover. Make your membership gift today at 610-694-8100 extension 4 or wdiy.org. We couldn't be here without you.
From the studios of NPR station WDIY in Bethlehem, PA, it is time for yet another hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks. You bet your garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and this week we begin with an unusual in the news. It's a letter to the editor. Now, this letter appeared in the opinion pages of a recent edition of the Allentown Morning Call, written by Laura N. from Salisbury Township. That's the Salisbury in PA, not Salisbury in the UK, which is not far from London, very close to Stonehenge, has the world's oldest clock that takes up an entire room in Salisbury Cathedral, and has had a Peter Gabriel song written about it. Back to Laura. The headline on her letter, "Tree Replacement Plans Should Be Reconsidered," sure sounds like it's anti-nature, doesn't it? But it's just the opposite. She writes, "As a former stream restoration professional, I'm very concerned that the city of Allentown has been cutting trees along the banks of the Little Lehigh." Background note, the Little Lehigh is a branch of the mighty Lehigh River, which weaves throughout our parks and includes an important and immensely popular trout breeding facility just feet from the water. Laura continues, "It is urgent that Allentown reconsider this plan, as it may have disastrous consequences. Park maintenance staff told me that there is, quote, a plan to replant the area with native trees. While replacing invasive species with native trees is, on the surface, a good idea, cutting down mature trees to plant saplings that could take decades to mature is not a good idea. Mature trees hold the banks of the river together and filter pollutants from development and agriculture. The banks of the Little Lehigh already show significant erosion. Removing the only thing stabilizing those banks will harm aquatic life and the food chains that life supports by clouding the water with sediment, making it difficult for that aquatic life to breathe and reproduce. Cutting down trees is also a climate change and air pollution threat," she adds. "Allentown Parks and Rec, please urgently reconsider your plan." Well said, Laura. I'm with you 100%. The dark side of so-called invasive plant control is that much more attention is paid to killing the bad plants without any attention to what will replace the valuable contributions of those plants. Shade and its resulting cooling of the areas around it, bird and animal habitat, protection against soil erosion, sequestering massive amounts of carbon, and producing abundant oxygen for us to breathe. Ah, but those incredibly useful trees are on somebody's naughty list, so down they come with destructive floods to follow. And why are they considered, quote, invasive? Because they come from other countries? Well, so did you and I. Yes, our treasured native plants were native centuries ago, and that was a different world with a very different climate. These so-called invasives are actually adapters, thriving despite climate change, and we need to depend on them to help us survive the future. That is, unless somebody with a book listing good and bad plants gets a hold of them.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning public affairs programs weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, politics, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. Public Affairs on 88.1 FM, streaming at WDIY.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, do you remember when I told you not to put kitchen waste into your compost bins last week? We're going to tell you a way that you can compost those kitchen scraps in an entirely different way and get even more premium material than compost itself. In the meantime, your fabulous phone calls at 610-694-8100 and then follow the prompts. Ed, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Sir. How are you today?
I am just ducky. How are you, Ed?
We are here in Colorado, raising a lot of food. Got some questions to ask today.
All right. What part of Colorado? I love Colorado.
We were over by Hotchkiss, Colorado.
Yeah, sure. I know where that is. Come on, Ed. Help me out. Well, okay. So first of all, are you anywhere near Denver?
No.
Are you anywhere near Colorado Springs?
No.
Are you anywhere near Cortez or Durango?
We are.
Oh, okay. There's an old historic theater in Cortez that I gave a talk about, you know, dry gardening, you know, how to get over the problems, and stayed with our hosts. They had a guest house up in the mountains. And we were at 7,000 feet the whole time, as you probably know. All right. So what can we do for Ed?
Well, Ed has a business. I run a dump truck, and I farm, and I have an excavator and stuff like that. And I have a friend of mine that has been raising fish, trout, in a concrete run. Well, the run's probably 250 foot long. Probably 8 foot wide and 6 foot deep.
Now, you say there's trout in there, and this is all exposed, right? This is out in the open.
It is.
Doesn't he have any problem with predators like raccoons and fish-eating birds?
Well, yeah, of course there is. Have you ever heard of mylar tape?
Yeah, oh, yeah, sure. Bird flash scare, something like that.
Works great.
Huh, that's great.
Probably one of the best products on the market for any kind of for gardeners, and you know, we used to put hot wire around our garden. Our garden's five acres.
Yeah.
So, you know, and we did it every year. We put hot wire up, hot wire up. My wife one day, she says, you know, we should try this Mylar tape.
Yeah.
This was 2 years ago.
Bird scare flash tape, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
But it does not just work for birds. It works for deer and bears and raccoons and you name it.
Yeah, yeah. We almost met a bear while we were staying at our guest house. We should tell people that bird scare flash tape is highly reflective. So when you get a little bit of wind, it flips and it cracks and it reflects all these different colors of the rainbow. It even whistles in certain kinds of wind. So it's not something the animals can get used to.
Not really. And it even works in the dark. People go, oh, how does it work at night? It definitely works at night, too.
Okay.
Correct.
So...
Where I'm at is that I clean these runs out. Now, he had taken the fish out. He sells the fish. They're about 12 to 14 inches long when he does it.
Mm-hmm.
They bring a truck up, pull the fish out. They flash freeze them right on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
And he sells fish this way. Mm-hmm. And he has more than one run. He's got a half a dozen runs. So he asked me one day, he says, can you come clean these runs out with your tractor?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking to myself, well, yeah, I guess, you know. So I went over there and cleaned the fish poop out of these runs. Now, these fish have been in there for almost a year.
Mm-hmm.
And he feeds them in there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the water circulates through there and everything. Well, I got about 5 yards per hole of fish manure.
Solid. Well, my friend, I think you're in a new business.
I think so. That's where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to quite go about it yet.
Well, I mean, social media should make that easier. I know from my appearances in Cortez that there are a lot of dedicated gardeners out there. And as you know, they struggle to get enough dry brown material to compost.
True.
So this is, it's not exactly worth its weight in gold, but, you know, how hard is it for you to, I would think it would be easy to dry at your altitude.
It is dry at this point.
So I would pack it up and into 1 pound sacks of some kind, no plastic.
Right.
And offer it on social media that you got it there. There must be farmers markets in all of these towns.
I would assume yes. And I would probably market more. I would like to market it more on the internet.
Because now we're talking about weight.
Correct. So what I did is I took a PPP meter, PPM meter, and tested it.
Mm-hmm.
And I put 2 tablespoons. Well, we started with 1 teaspoon and 1 cup of water.
Mm-hmm.
And on a PP meter, it showed it to be at about 180 parts per million.
Okay.
And then we added 2 teaspoons. And it went up from there, and then we added 3 teaspoons and 4 teaspoons, so on. So what we're trying to figure out is the strength of the fertilizer itself.
You don't
now,
have to.
Somebody told me.
You don't have to. No. When these.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, you are an amateur right now. You're not selling kind of professionally. I think you bring these bags to the local farmers market. Locally grown, absolutely organic, right? Get paper sacks,
paper
fill them
sacks
up with a pound, and your instructions would be diluted as much as you want. If you just need a light feeding, do this much. If you need a heavy feeding, do this much. But please experiment with this product and get back to us with what How works. But I guarantee it will work. Fish poop is one of the absolute best fertilizers you can find. There is something about fertilizer that is bred in water that makes it especially good for plants. I can see even applying it as a dry material would be good if you actually ever had rain. but you don't. So I would recommend it as a liquid drench.
As a liquid drench. And that's what you'd put on the bag itself.
Yeah, yeah.
Mix it as a liquid.
Mix it as a liquid drench. Try to establish a back and forth relationship. Facebook page for it and you. And you're off and running.
Facebook page for the
product and for you.
Okay. And for me.
And
see, we grow a lot. So I have a bed that I did made out here. It's 18 inches deep, 36 inches wide, 50 foot long. I put, I raised a radish, just a normal red radish
mm-hmm.
in there. I planted it on the 1st of May.
Okay.
And by the 28th of May, they were golf ball size.
Uh-huh. You know you're supposed to pick them small, though.
6,800. Yeah. I know, but at 6,800 feet, I did it. They grew in less than 28 days.
Ed, the more pictures you can post on this Facebook site of your own garden, the better off you're going to do. But this is fabulous. Where I live in the Lehigh Valley, I live very close to one of the largest trout hatcheries in Pennsylvania. And, of course, this is a mammoth enterprise where they have everything from the fry to these gigantic trout that they release in streams all over Pennsylvania. And, you know, now I got to go back and ask them because I know they clean the tanks out regularly. What are you doing with this stuff? Give it to me.
Yeah, I would suggest if you do that. Now, the government can't give that stuff away, though.
What do you mean?
We have a fish hatchery.
Right.
I don't think you have to somehow do something with it. But these people, it's a great idea. I don't know. So I'm sure somebody's taking it from them. So.
But, Ed, I'm telling you, to begin with, farmers markets and natural food stores, things like that. You got a lot of hippy dippy communities around you. Package it up, get it started, and I suspect it's going to take off.
All right.
So I love talking to you, but we are stone out of time now. So good luck.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
Tell us how you're doing, okay?
I will. I will keep in touch.
All right, sir. Good luck.
Thank you, sir.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and suggest that a big and bold amaryllis bulb in full bloom would make a dazzling thank you gift when you're invited to Thanksgiving dinner. Look for ones whose flowers have just opened up. Reject any that look like they've been sitting around too long after they started to bloom. Water it deeply once, and then position it in bright, indirect light. But don't go acquiring your amaryllis just yet, because we'll be right back with the best way to turn your kitchen scraps into premium plant food, and your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, do you remember when I told you not to put kitchen waste into your compost bins last week? And you sat there going, well, what am I supposed to do with them? We're going to tell you a way that you can, quote, compost those kitchen scraps in an entirely different way and get even more premium material than compost itself. In the meantime, your fabulous phone calls at 610-694-8100. Follow the prompts and talk to us or leave us a message. Like Ross, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ross. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well.
And where is Ross doing pretty well?
In Bowlesburg, Pennsylvania. We're part of Happy Valley, so State College is recognizable.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so you're out near Penn State. What can we do you for?
Well, I was putting my raised beds to bed for the winter, and I decided to have my soil tested by Penn State's Ag Extension. And what I found is all five of my beds were very high in calcium, potassium, and magnesium.
Mm-hmm.
And I did nothing to cause that to happen. The only thing I have in there besides compost and topsoil is perlite. And I'm wondering, could perlite do that?
No, just the opposite. Perlite is the most inert material you can imagine. Now, is this your first soil test?
No, it's my, probably I had one 2 or 3 years ago.
And are they comparable?
Well, the one 2 or 3 years ago was high in calcium.
But not the others?
No, not the others. And that was when I was still more of a flat earth farmer. I didn't have raised beds.
Okay, so you do now. Good man. Now, either can you remember or might you have the test results in front of you? I would like to know the level of organic matter in your soil.
I'm sorry, I don't have those available to me right now.
Okay. Do you remember what pH your soil was?
Yes, it was very neutral, 7.
So right around 7.
Yep, and the organic matter is super high because I mentioned compost and a little bit of topsoil, but the primary part was what they call a mushroom compost, but it looks like it has a lot of wood in it too.
Well, mushroom, quote, compost is generically the basic version is horse manure, ground up corn cobs, and straw. So if you have wood in it, I would not buy that mushroom soil again.
Well, I won't.
Now, how was your garden this year? How did you do?
I did very well until a groundhog found a way to get through my solar-powered electric fence.
Uh-huh. Groundhogs are treacherous.
Yes, yes. Particularly my tomatoes did very well.
Now, when you plant your tomatoes, do you use my trick of crushing up eggshells and putting it right there in the hole on top of the
No, I've never done that. I've never done that.
Okay. The eggshells, grind them up as best you can, make the particles small, and it will release that calcium slowly. Now, what else did you grow vaguely?
Broccoli, zucchini, a couple of different types of cucumbers, kale, lettuce.
Okay, and all of your crops came out well?
Yes.
Okay, why were you looking for trouble?
Well, I just thought I would check it out. I wasn't looking for trouble, but I saw some.
Yeah, exactly. You you don't have to look for trouble. Trouble knows where you live. It has all your credit card numbers, you know. So when a garden is really thriving, and as you say, you're using a lot of organic material, I wouldn't worry about numbers on a page. Now, if you start to see some weirdness on any of your crops, that's easy to look up and see if an overabundance of, say, magnesium might cause that. But in reality, those soil tests are meant to find deficiencies. There are really distinctive symptoms that show up when you're low on calcium or magnesium or kryptonite or whatever is in your soil. But if it's truly that abundant, the plants are just taking up what they want, and nobody's getting hurt. From what you told me, I can't think of anything that would increase your mineral levels, but high levels of minerals are really good, you know, within non-crazy limits. And again, your soil test is your plants. You know, the way the plants look, the way they produce. If everything is going fine, then you don't go to a doctor and say, what could be wrong with me?
Okay, I get that very well. Thank you.
Yeah, always go by the health of the plants. But it sounds like you've got a nice little garden, and what I want you to do next year, when you get your tomato starts ready, you dig the hole, and I guess you know to dig it very deeply, and then you drop the root ball of your tomato plant into that hole with maybe only the top third of the plant above the soil line. And then you crush up finely a dozen eggshells, put those on top of the root ball, fill the hole back up with the soil you removed, and then feed the plants by placing compost over the top of the beds. The reason I tell people to plant tomatoes deeply is tomatoes are somewhat unique in that they grow auxiliary roots along the buried stem. So every part of that stem that's underground is growing a bigger root system for your plant.
Well, I maybe have an erroneous learning on that, too. I do bury a lot of the stem, but I bury them by laying it down and covering them relatively shallowly.
Okay.
Only a third above, and because of, I thought that helped the roots stay warmer.
Well, see, this is why somebody in my position has to realize that there is no basic garden advice. I mean, we've got so many different kind of climates, so many kind of zones. That trick of trenching your tomatoes comes from very cold areas so that, yes, more of the plant and its root systems are closer to the surface. But otherwise, it's not good for the plant because you can accidentally break it. You're having that part of the stem too close to the ground. In our area, you want to go straight down. All right, man?
All right. Thanks for the help. I appreciate it.
Pleasure's all ours. Take care, man.
You too. Bye.
That number to call, 610-694-8100, and then just follow the prompts. Bill, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks very much, Mike. How you doing?
I am just ducky, thanks for asking. How is Bill doing?
Doing well. I'm out here in Yardley, PA, just north of Philly.
Okay. And what can we do for Bill in Yardley?
Well, decades ago, we planted some butterfly bushes to attract pollinators, like butterflies. We also have scarlet runner beans along a chain link fence and milkweed as well. So, you know, we're trying to target them in general. The question I have is whether to get rid of the butterfly bushes and plant more scarlet runner beans, or just leave the bushes as is, because I've been finding out that they are potentially an invasive species. And these are ones with white flowers, so they probably are one of the invasive species, but I'm not quite sure one way or another.
Okay. Yes, there are native plant enthusiasts who don't want anything planted. I was just reading an article that quoted Doug Tallamy of the University of Delaware about why you should get rid of your butterfly bush. And, you know, there were some decent reasons. It does spread, it does take over. But in terms of attracting butterflies, they are the killer. They are the bush most filled with butterflies in your garden, right?
That's correct. I mean, we have seen quite a few. We get some monarchs every once in a while, and with the milkweed there, we sometimes get them to put up a chrysalis.
Very good. Now, milkweed is the host plant for the monarch caterpillar, and in some cases, it also feeds the adults, unless, of course, the babies have eaten it to the ground early on in their caterpillar form. But that, you know, there's nothing like milkweed because it's easy for people to provide pollen and nectar for butterflies all through the year, and especially in the fall for the monarchs as they begin their migration. But just as important is feeding those caterpillars, or you ain't going to get no butterflies. Now, scarlet runner beans. This is one of my favorite crops. This is a true bean, a storage bean, like a pinto bean or a navy bean, something like that. It grows on a vine. The vines are somewhat self-supporting. I find they do better if they get a little help. Do you do anything to support yours?
Well, I actually plant them all along a chain link fence I have. And it turns out that my raised beds are there. So I just plant them in the back and I can put something else in the front.
Okay, very good. As you know, I mean, you'll get some butterflies there, but they are most famous for attracting hummingbirds.
Haven't seen any of those yet. It may just be the area we're in.
Yeah. The tubular flowers you have, are they nicely orange or red?
Yes, they're orange.
Okay. Well, you should be able to attract hummingbirds during the year. And if you want to up the bet, I would tie red stuff around that fence. You know, red belts, you know, long strips of red material. The hummingbirds, the more red they see, the more they're going to zero in on that area, and then they're going to find your scarlet runner bean. I'll also mention, as you probably know, the scarlet runner beans are delicious in their, quote, string bean stage, when, you know, you eat them just like green beans, string beans. But if you let the pods dry on the vine, you get the most beautiful seeds in the world. They are speckled purple and black and a little bit of gold every once in a while. They are just absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, we use them a lot in our chili, for example.
And yeah.
Have about 2 quarts of them now because we have a long fence.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what they're for. They're for storage beans. But almost all storage beans can be eaten fresh if you pick them when they're still slender. Now, if you want to reduce the number of butterfly bush in your garden, our friend in Pottstown, PA, Ron Rochelle, a master monarch tagger, He's heavily involved in the Monarch programs. And on just a small lot, you know, just his, quote, backyard, he has dozens and dozens of plants that either attract butterflies, feed the caterpillars, or both. And he would recommend you look at mountain mint. He says he gets more butterflies and more diverse ones on his mountain mint than he does even on the legendary butterfly bush. And it's not a toxic plant, you know. Yes, it does seed heavily and new sprouts do come up, but you can just mow those to the ground when they're babies and they won't regrow.
I'll have to keep an eye out that, because I actually haven't seen more sprouts. They grow a lot from their plant where they're already there, and I literally get them, you know, they're 10 feet high, but I haven't seen new sprouts out.
So, in other words, yours are well-behaved and there's no problem.
Yeah, they've been fine. So I just didn't know, you know, what they were and what the case was. So this definitely helps me figure out what to do with them.
Yeah.
Keep them.
And nature herself is the best person to decide what should grow where.
Okay. Well, good. I really appreciate it. It's going to save me a lot of time, and I'll hunt up the other milkweed.
Yes, and try the mountain mint. All right. Nice talking to you, man.
Likewise. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind all of yous out there that it is still premium tree and shrub planting time. The prices have dropped to clear out stock before Christmas, and survival rates are much higher for trees and shrubs planted in the fall than if they were planted in the spring. Just be sure to water your new installations deeply several times a week if we don't get rain, and keep that watering up for a full year. But don't go checking your garden center for sales just yet, because we'll be right back to turn your kitchen scraps into garden gold and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the eclectic studios of NPR station WDIY-FM in Bethlehem. The rampant plant known as wisteria is often stingy with its lilac-like blooms. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal the somewhat crazy ways people have tried to get this stubborn plant to flower. Plus your flowery phone calls. That's on the next You Bet Your Garden. Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and we are in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will tell you how to make garden gold out of your kitchen scraps and provide much better food for your plants than if you mix them into an ordinary compost pile. But before we get to that, your phone calls, 610-694-8100. Just follow the prompts and leave us a message, and you too will have the honor of speaking to me. Frank, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. How are you doing, man?
All right, but I got a flower problem.
Okay. Where is Frank and his flower problem?
In Bethlehem.
Bethlehem.
Bethlehem, PA, yep.
All right, so talk to me. What do you got? What do you need?
Well, We're doing okay with hostas on the side of the house. It's a double with a series of doubles. So everybody has like an alley between the homes.
Right.
So the hostas are doing good because that's partially shaded. So they're doing great. Up front, roses, they absolutely love it. They're doing great. But we can't grow tulips anywhere. They come up, they wither, they drop dead. And we've tried planting them in front of the house. We tried planting them on the side where the hostas are. We tried planting them in the back. And they just grow a bit, and then they drop dead.
So they're not being eaten by deer?
Well, sometimes squirrels dig up the bulbs. Yeah, that does happen.
But you're saying there's something else going on?
There's something else going on. They don't seem to like anywhere that we put them on the property.
Mm-hmm.
So we're wondering, do we continue to try to plant them, or do we put them in a box, or what can we do?
Well, what about other spring bulbs? Do you grow daffodils or crocus or anything?
No. We're not highly advanced, and I think we just landed on tulips because we like their color. But maybe we need to consider, different decorative plants, I guess.
I will tell you that daffodils are bulletproof. No creature bothers them because they are toxic, and they are very adaptable. And unlike tulips, which are often just one and done, daffodils come back year after year and expand their base. So this is a bulb that you plant once, so to speak, and every year you'll have more of them out there. And I got to tell you, as we're coming out of winter, there's nothing better than a bright, shiny sea of yellow somewhere on your property.
Mm.
But let me address your question directly. When do you plant your tulips?
We had been planting them like late winter going into spring.
Oh, why?
I don't know.
Well, you're
easy. I have
easy.
No idea. Because
okay.
We don't know what we're doing. I think that probably answers your question.
Oh, yeah. If you plant bulbs, especially tulip bulbs, too early in the season, they can prematurely sprout, which will cause the kind of issue that you're seeing. But they have to be in the ground for at least 30 days before your first hard freeze. Now, don't worry, you haven't missed that yet. The classic advice I was taught and that I've been giving out for years and years is plant your garlic in August or September, but wait to plant your spring bulbs until after Halloween, but before Thanksgiving.
Ah, okay.
You want to give them enough time to develop a good root system and be ready to pop up on time. So, you know, I think it's simply, in this case, a matter of timing. And you get them in at the right time, I think you'll have great success with them.
All right. We do want to continue to try with the tulips because we did have success with them in another place we lived not too far away, Salisbury, up on the mountainside. And they just kept replicating themselves. They filled a whole garden area. They just kept expanding. And we were like, oh, this is great. Maybe it'll work here. But we'll try the different planting season. And then you recommended daffodils. Is that correct?
Yeah. And
yeah, maybe we'll just move to those instead.
Well, I want you to try some tulips as well.
Okay.
Tulips are not known to reliably return like daffodils, but the ones that are your basic red tulip. None of these fancy parrot tulips or Darwin tulips or anything like that. Just red tulips, they are the best at returning year after year.
Good news. Okay, we can try that.
All right. Good luck, and hope the deer don't eat the tulips before you see them.
Oh, there's a gate. They can't get in.
Okay. Famous last words. All right. You take care, Frank.
All right. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye. As promised, it is time for the question of the week, which we are calling how to get the most out of your kitchen scraps and how to handle worm poop over the winter. Christopher in Freiburg, Switzerland writes, I have a question I've been wanting to ask you for some time. I have two worm bins and never know what to do with the compost that they produce during the fall and winter. No matter where I store the finished castings, on the balcony, in the basement, they begin to develop a nasty smell rather quickly. Should I just find a place in the garden where I can pile all this up during the cold season? Will it leach nutrients if I do that? Is it safe to use smelly compost? The same questions apply to the compost tea that is produced by a worm bin. Well, this is a situation I know well, as all of my kitchen scraps are recycled through the stackable worm bin that sits on our insulated, enclosed porch. And while things do seem to slow down a bit in the winter, you still do have to harvest that finished material to make room for fresh garbage to make sure that your worms have enough new food to eat. Now, although Chris is thousands of miles away in Switzerland, a nation that many people think is freezing cold most of the time, the answers to his questions are totally applicable to most U.S. gardeners, because winters are milder in Freiburg than you might think. Their normal winter low is around 27 degrees Fahrenheit, and it rarely drops below 18 degrees Fahrenheit, which is about the same, or maybe even slightly warmer, than my Lehigh Valley garden most winters. And that makes these options workable for winter worm wranglers just about everywhere. No matter what, try and wait for a warm spell to take your finished worm compost outside. We're talking daytime temperatures in the 40s or above. This will help any worms that are still rooting around in your finished material survive for a while after they go out to the garden or compost or whatever. All right, your number one choice. Incorporate the finished worm castings into one or more of your compost bins. This is the choice of choices for the truly cold months of January and February, and it works especially well if you have professionally made bins with locking lids, both to keep vermin out and keep the contents warm enough for any live worms to have a decent chance of staying alive and working. No matter what, you must have extra shredded leaves on hand to cover the newly incorporated worm castings, aka worm poop, which you should mix in as well as possible. Number 1A. Same goes for the worm tea that comes out the spout that all worm bins should have at the bottom. Outdoor compost bins and piles can often get a little dry over the winter, and what better substance to provide that needed moisture than the nutrient-rich liquid from a worm bin. Piles that are open to the elements are generally going to have good moisture levels from rain and snow. Just remember that those open piles produce compost much more slowly than sealed ones that are designed to hold in their heat. That's why those purchased compost bins are made of black plastic, a color that absorbs the maximum amount of heat on a sunny winter's day. No matter what, again, be sure to keep a couple bags of shredded leaves inside your garage or other warm area to use when needed. Number two, houseplants. First, let's make this clear. Most houseplants should not be fed over the winter because they're dormant and the food is wasted. But some exceptions, like Meyer lemons and other citrus that go outdoors in the summer and come back inside for the winter, are actively growing in the off-season and would love some natural feedings. I recommend placing an inch or two of worm castings on the surface of their soil or watering the plants with worm tea every 2 weeks or so. Always dilute worm water 50-50 with regular clean water before you pour. It's really concentrated otherwise. 2A, feeding your springtime starts at tomatoes, peppers, and such. For many years, I didn't really feel the need to feed my baby tomato and pepper plants that I was starting from seed, and all went pretty well. Then I decided to give them some diluted worm water feedings along the way, and all went even better. Except for the terrible tomato tragedy of 2018, which did not involve feeding, and of which we will not speak again. So, if you start your own seeds, I suggest you water their soil with diluted worm tea weekly, beginning about 3 weeks after the sprouts first appear above the soil. And number three, experiment with refrigeration. Scoop your finished worm bin material into quart-sized lidded containers, you know, like the ones you get when you get hot and sour soup to take out. Punch a few holes in the tops of the lids and put the containers in the warmest part of your fridge. This should buy you enough time to get to the next non-freezing stretch of weather, and because they're in the fridge, they won't smell. And finally, about that nasty smell, do not use stinky worm castings or tea or even straight compost directly on your plants. Instead, mix any fetid material into one of your biggest outdoor piles that's moving along a little slowly. Well, those sure were a lot of good suggestions for how to make the best plant food out of your kitchen scraps. Now, wasn't they? Luckily, you can read all of that important information over at your leisure or your leisure at the Gardens Alive section of the Gurney's website. Just visit the Gurney's site and click on Garden Resources or type GURNEYS plus You Bet Your Garden into your favorite search engine. Yikes, my producer is threatening to steal my scraps if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 610-694-8100. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched, refuse, teeming to our garden shore at our new email address. You Bet Your Garden 1@gmail.com. At least this is one place where we are number one. Either way, please, please, please include your phone number and location. You make us so sad when you don't. You'll find our new phone number, our new email address, a link to the Gardens Alive archive of previous answers, and new and improved links to our numerous podcast sites. It's all at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. You Bet Your Garden is a public radio show and podcast produced and delivered to you every week from the studios of NPR station WDIY in Bethlehem, PA. You Bet Your Garden was created by Mike McGrath. Mike McGrath was created when he stopped on Thunder Road to ask Bruce Springsteen for directions, took a right at the light, and then, boys, he was on his own. Our musical director is Ken Queter. Our social media director is Amanda Norfleet. Our peerless prince of profound production is James Ziprote. Margaret McConnell is the executive director of WDIY-FM. Our guardian angel is the lovely Jonas Bowen. Our incredible assistant is the legendary, awesome ninja, Sean. I'm your awesome host, Mike McGrath, and I'll be planting and mulching the last of my garlic cloves until we meet again next week.